Good morning.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
It was all right, man. Just worked and did stuff for college kids. That's what I do.
Oh, yeah. So. Dude, this was a delicious... This Coors Light was just what I needed after a hard day of work, personally.
Dude, I needed a drink today. It was a long day.
Yeah.
Rough day.
I feel... It's a rough day.
Yeah.
Jared, I feel that, bro. So yeah, man. Well, Jared, how was your trip over here? Did you run into any traffic?
No, it was smooth sailing.
It's it was smooth sailing here in your neighborhood. You want to know something radical? I went to get in my car Monday morning, and on that little track where you open your car door and there's like that little track where you know, the door meets the body of the car, I guess, whatever you would call that, there was like this yellow slime, and I was like, well, where does yellow slime come from? Why is it technically inside the car? What is this? And I was like, what, did somebody puke in here? Like, why would anybody puke in my car? I've been around the car. And then, so like, I cleaned it off with like a napkin I had in my, that I had in my, truck there. And, there was like eggshells underneath it. And I was like, what the heck? How did an egg get in here? And then I looked at the outside of the car and I parked on the street and some hooligans egged this out of my truck the other day.
That sucks, dude.
So yeah, if you're leaving the Smithsonian today and you have egg all over your car, we're going to have to go on a manhunt here for these young hooligans.
Dude, I'll find them. I'll shit in their mailbox.
I don't I feel like that's really the only logical... Yeah. That's the logical next step.
You got to one-up them.
Yeah, that's true. We got to give them an upper decker, but on their mailbox, not their toilets. So I feel that. Guys, thanks for tuning in to another exciting episode of the Sean vs. Wild podcast. I'm your host, as always, Sean Thriller Smith. Today, I am joined in the Smithsonian by Jared Howell from Light Treasons. Jared, I almost called you Gerald, man. This Coors Light's just really kicking in. Jared Howell. Man, that's easy to say Gerald from Jared Howell.
Dude, at this point in my life, I'll respond to anything that starts with a J.
Hey, Jerry, coming in hot here.
All the time. Or yeah. Josh. I get called Josh a lot.
Well, you know what? You kind of look like a Josh. You don't run into many Jareds in this day and age.
I worked at my day job. I work with like four Jareds. When I started, there were four of us. It was really confusing.
That was just like when I was in elementary school. I was born in 86. And for the record, Sean was probably the most common guy's name, probably in the top 10 of the 80s. So when I went to school, I would have like three or four Seans in my class and probably 10 in my grade. Every year.
I can see that. I remember it. I think I know a lot of Sean's.
Yeah.
We were born the same year, so
yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm just going to go out there on the record. I'm going to say that I'm probably one of the coolest ones.
No, I'll give you that. Most of the Seans I've met in my life are dicks.
Yeah, just total shitheads.
Yeah.
The thing is, I was able to transcend that. I can't say I'm not a dick sometimes or most times, but I'm able to transcend that in a fun way. I do what I can. So, yeah. Jared, you're here. You're here to promote and chat about Light Treasons. And you're not the first person on this podcast to do that. But I really want to take the time this time because we talked to Clay back in episode one. We talked to Zach some weeks ago. And he just barely, you know, lightly treasoned onto the topic of Light Treasons.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
And so I'm going to leave it up to you. You're going to be the flag bearer. So you need to give me the ins and outs, the deets, what these listeners need to know about Light Treasons.
So this is fun because I've been in the band the least.
So I hope you've beefed up on your history.
I did. I asked everybody before I came. I was like, guys, how did you guys? I remember Zach and Rob college. But essentially, they were all just in that band called Hark the Herald back in 2005, 6-ish, when we were all doing our thing when we were younger. And that broke up. And then I guess some years later, Joel and Zach, the drummer from Hark and the guitar player, were just, they found Rob. Zach knew him from college or whatever, and they put together Light Treasons, and Clay was in Phoenix with iOmega at the time, or maybe just getting out of iOmega, and they asked him to play guitar, and he came back, and that's how the band was born. Rob played bass, and then they couldn't do that, so Biff from Foxbat was in Light Treasons as the original bass player, and he quit to do Foxbat, and here I am.
Here you go. That's riveting stuff. That's weird, wild stuff.
So I can tell you more in depth about the last year that I've been here. But
well, I know you guys have been hard at work. Everybody that's been on the show has basically told me the same thing. You guys have been hard at work on this project called Fortunes, this album called Fortunes. Is it still called Fortunes?
It is still called Fortunes. It better be. It's on the CD cover.
The artwork has been greenlit, so I certainly hope so. Well, tell me about Fortunes here. Let's start back. You said you can tell me more about the past year. Let's take it back to the past year. Do you know where the concept came from, or what was your mind frame when you guys were writing it?
So I joined, they were two songs into Fortunes when I joined the band in March last year. And the concept at the time was to put out an album as we wrote it. So we were going to release a song every 6 to 9 weeks, and it was going to be called Fortunes. And the idea was pretty much we'd have a tarot card for every song that came out. And Joel's wife, Erin Eichenberger, did all the work, the artwork for the tarot cards for us. So that pigeonholed us into starting all the songs with "the," which is unfortunate. They had the Marionette and the Gravedigger written for when I joined already. And we just kept trying to do that concept. So we got three songs released over the next few months. And then we were in talks with Puckett to, I guess this is all kind of public knowledge now, but we were in talks with Puckett to sign to Little Heart, and he was like, save the rest. Right. So the next few songs we recorded, we kind of bailed on that every 6 to 9 week plan, and we were going to put out the album. And then when Puckett passed away, we decided to just continue with that plan and just go ahead and release the whole album. And we finished the next couple songs, and
I'm glad that you guys did just buckle down and decide to put it out. Puckett would have wanted to have heard all that and gotten a completed product, you know. And unfortunately, he's not here to be a part of it. I miss that dude every day. And I think in Louisville does.
For sure.
Because, you know, he just had a huge impact on everybody. But I'm glad that you guys are, going ahead with the project. And the artwork is fantastic, by the way. You mentioned that a lot of the artwork was done by Joel's wife.
Yeah. And she killed it. She dealt with all our shit because she would send us a card and we would maybe more and
dude, add more flames and skulls, bro.
Yeah. So we would all fight about it, but we ended up just letting her you know what, you're the artist, do your thing. And she just killed it. So,
you know, the other day I was at Guest Room Records, and there was some album that was on the, I don't know, albums to buy for a dollar
rack, you know, that sort of thing, the discount buys. And there was an album by Three Dog Night, and inside of it, okay, were these large, like, I don't know, 8x10-ish cards, like playing cards, where it was like in a very elaborate back, and then you flip it over and it's like a picture of them. Like every picture is them being a different character. So there's like a guy that, I don't know, I guess looked like some gambler, like, you know, 1800s gambler. And then there's another guy that's like this like sexy dude with long hair or whatever. And very similar. If you guys, you know, I don't want to say you should rip that off Three Dog Night, but you should rip off Three Dog Night and maybe throw some cards out there with you guys on it.
I think we, well, not with us on it, but I think we may have already accidentally ripped off them. All the download cards, we ended up, because there's a tarot card for each song on the album, we ended up just making a tarot card. So the download cards, if you buy the album, you get that tarot card with it, or you can buy a set of the tarot cards to you. So we actually have physical tarot cards for each song on the album.
Very sick. Where did you get those done?
I have no idea. Zach worked his internet magic and found a place to print them for us.
He's a marketing guy. And not only did he probably find that guy, somebody to print them, he's probably like, well, I got the best price out there too on top of it.
No, he did. That's all. We spend a lot of time with Zach because doing his entrepreneur thing, he's always like telling us shit like, guys, we're not our user. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like,
we're not our user, guys. Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. And so he's always giving us his marketing spiel, but it's good to have it. I mean, he's super business savvy. So yeah, this is the first band I've been in where we're like sort of stay afloat, like monetarily. So
yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. I wish I had somebody like that in one of our bands, because when you're just kind of winging it and it's like, well, we didn't make any money this year, guys.
Yeah.
But we went on tour, and boy, was that fun.
Well, I mean, I think it'll still be like that, but at least, like, we'll have somebody that'll be like, guys, we lost this much money.
Yeah. He'd be like, you see the red and the black here? We're in the red. We need to be in the black here. We're not our user. We're not on user right now, whatever that means. Zach, if you're listening, just maybe shoot me a quick on user, what that means, definition. I'd appreciate it. Yeah, so you didn't have that you mean to tell me that you didn't have a marketing genius when you were in Akeldama or Edison J?
God, no, man. What do we want our band to be called? What about Jettison and Pig Latin? Okay. Like, marketing genius.
Those were the days, though. And I wanted to bring those up specifically. I didn't, I didn't warn you beforehand.
That's all right.
But I was thinking about, man, those days at PJ's Bakery. A bakery by day, randomly a music venue by night, and that thing worked.
That was good times.
That and like the Sellers, Silver Creek bowling lanes.
Dude, those were the jam. I enjoyed the bowling lane shows, man, with 812 Dirty Squad and all those.
Those were the days, though. Good times. Isn't it crazy? It's like, so we all just get together to play these shows, and, you know, like Edison J, like you're in Light Treasons, you're in Edison J, and like Robbie's in Foxbat, and Chase is, always doing something. And then, like, the dudes in, like, what became Maha Baby Yeah or whatever. And then we'd play shows with Emmanuel or the Linwoods or, like, all these other bands and all these other people that went on to do huge things just at one bakery or one bowling lane.
Yeah, something like that. It was huge. Like, you think about it at the time. Like, I remember seeing, you could go to local shows and see, like, Emmanuel, a Suburban Blood Drive, and I don't know, like was it the Merediths? Like we had killer local shows back then. And
Sacred Sorrow.
Yeah.
They always drew all the kids.
They're back.
Dude, I know they're back. I gotta get
better
them
than ever.
I know. I saw them with you guys back in January.
Oh yeah. The new vintage.
The very first episode of the Sean vs. Wild podcast, we promoted the show because Clay was the guest, and not only did he play in Light Treasons, he also had to play at Foxbat that night. So, but I went to that show, and Sacred Sorrow, they were on fire that night.
Yeah, they killed it. They ripped it. I've never seen them have a pit that big, especially like at one of our shows. There's usually not mosh pits. So.
Man, I will say this too, man. I was blown away when I saw you guys live. You guys have a great, just super fun rock and roll vibe to you guys.
Thanks, man.
And I feel like that's kind of a missing element. It's kind of a missing element, not only in Louisville, but just in many places that you go to. You guys just, you just rock, bro.
It's not metal. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you know, some people rock and it's metal, or some people rock and it's, I don't know, screamo or whatever it is that it is. But you guys just plain rock.
Yeah, that's, I always feel weird. People like that don't know us are like, what kind of band are you in? What music you play? I'm like, I don't want to answer this way, but it's the only way I can. And it's just rock music, like, yeah. Generic.
Have you ever heard of rock and roll? We are both of those things, actually. Yeah. So, well, hey, that's a great style to, that's a great way to describe yourself. Yeah. So, and then you have, as I always like to say on the podcast, you have prepared a piece.
Yeah. We have a song in the wings of
it. I always said it, prepared a piece. Like, you, like, you're like, oh, yeah, actually. I want to put you on the spot, like, make you play it right here.
Well, yes. Hand me that bass.
Hand me that bass, and I'll be playing it right underneath Michael Jackson's cardboard cutout here.
Dude, that's a sick cutout, though.
Hey, man. Life size. So, nothing like staring at a cardboard cutout that's taller than both of us. you know, while he's just giving you the evil, mascaraed eyes.
He's bad, man.
That's true. He's bad. What can you say? What can you say? But yeah, okay, so you have prepared a piece. Tell me all about this song that you have.
So it's called The Rebel. One of the things that I like about the whole Fortunes concept is, even though we didn't end up releasing them as we wrote them like that, it got written that way, like we were going to release them every 6 to 9 weeks. So it's, I mean, like with any band, you get, I guess it's different because you have this very specific time frame of the last like year and a half where like everybody knows like that's what we were been doing because we were promoting it that way. So as everything was unfolding, we kind of wrote these songs about our lives, and this one we wrote during like the lead up to the election, and none of our bands had ever taken a political stance before, so we wrote this song, and it's just generally kind of, I don't know, how shitty capitalism is and right. Like our government and just everything, really, and it's just kind of like our cry out for rebellion,
right?
If you will, I guess that sounds generic and punk rock, but that's what it is.
So. Hey, well, it's worked. It worked in the past. It'll work now. And it's always like when the times are the shittiest is when the music becomes the best. You know, because people need that. People need that escape, and people need that voice, I guess. You know,
for
and
sure.
It's up to those that play music to be the voice for the voiceless.
Yeah, I mean,
sounds deep.
It's so deep.
That is where you guys come in.
We're trying anyway. Yeah.
That is where the rebel comes in. Also, before we get to the song, I will say I had a conversation at the time. Listeners, at this time, you haven't heard this conversation yet. You'll hear it like next week. But a few days ago, I did record with a good friend of ours, Erica Sellers, from the Dead Deads.
Okay,
yeah. And she was discussing... Spoiler alert, guys, if you don't want to get a spoiler for next week's episode, but she was discussing the same things, like, you know, hey, there's a lot going on in the political landscape, and we have some grievances that we need to air with that, and this is a very, I mean, as crappy as what's going on in the world right now for many people, it's going to be a good time for punk rock music, just because...
Yeah, I made a Facebook post about that, like, right after the election. I was like, you guys, punk rock's about to get so lit right now. And, like, a couple people were like, oh, yeah, the world's going to shit, but at least you get good records. And I was like, optimism, guys.
Yeah,
come on.
True.
Like,
well, I mean, the world won't go to shit if you have good records. Look at it that way. It's all about perspective. My world's great, man. I got these Sabbath albums, bro. I'll be great. But, yeah. So, all right, you brought a piece. It's called The Rebel. Listeners, tune in. Here we go. This is Light Treasons with The Rebel.
Our fate has always been in your hands. Holding back our soul to serve your plan. Than we think, but than a distance seems. Dividing light drawn from above. Leave us wandering, not knowing what's to come. Our fate has always
Oh yeah, everybody. That was The Rebel by Light Treasons. That was one heck of a little ditty you did there, Jared.
Thanks, dude.
I see appreciate what you did there.
We did it.
We certainly did. I love your enthusiasm. What can I say?
It was it's a fun one to write.
Yeah. I mean, what mindset were you in when you wrote this?
Mostly just like at that point, that was like the second song I wrote with the band. So more just so because I'm, you know, I've always played guitar in every band right. I've been in. So that was more like, hey, let's play bass like a bass player for this song. So
right.
That was kind of where my headset was in. Like, but,
let's do the third. We'll go down to the fifth, maybe the seventh, the octave. We'll do that. And then, you know, do that ditty. I don't know. That's bass terms, I guess.
That's like what we do, man. We we third, we octave, we...
You know, what can I say? We do what we do. And I'm not even a bass player. I just play drums. I do have a bass in the background,
dude,
though.
You're part of Team Rhythm Section. That's yeah. All right.
I will say this, man. If I did purchase a bass not too long ago. Obviously, it's just right there. And for the listeners at home, it's what is it? What would you say? It's probably a $10,000 Gene Simmons Axe bass. Just kidding. It's a Squire. It's like $150. But
nothing wrong with that, man.
But so I'm learning, and I will say that being a part of the Rhythm Section, playing drums for so long, I was like, well, I'm actually taking to this pretty easily. I get it.
Yeah, dude. I feel like after now that I'm like acclimated, I feel like this is probably the instrument I should have been playing like through my teens and. I like it a lot now.
Was it an easy transition to go from guitar to bass?
Fairly, yeah. I just kind of followed the root notes. If you know anything about music, sure. You'll know what that fucking means. but yeah, I just I tried not to play. Like I just tried to follow the kick drum. I knew that much.
Yeah.
From just listening to other musicians talk about it. But I transitioned fairly easy, and I just played simple stuff for a while, and then worked my way up.
Who's your favorite bass player?
Man, this is a cliche answer, but probably if like Flea.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah.
I've heard of him. I actually saw Red Hot Chili Peppers not too long ago. And by not too long ago, I guess I mean like 5 years ago now. But Flea was a monster live.
Dude, he's
and him and Chad Smith, so tight, insane.
And then, I can't think of it. I'm blinking on his name. The dude from Thrice writes some killer bass riffs to you.
Thrice is fantastic. They just get better with age, too.
They do. Their last album's killer. That's, like, my favorite so far, I think.
Yeah, I love them. But, yeah, also, coming up, if you enjoyed The Rebel, if you've enjoyed any of the songs that you've heard, because this is the third Light Treason song on the Sean vs. Wild podcast throughout the history. If you've enjoyed any of it, you have to pick up the new album, Fortunes. It is done. It is in the can. And you guys have an album release show coming up.
We do July 8th at Haymarket.
July 8th, Haymarket Whiskey Bar, Louisville, Kentucky. That's a great place to play.
Dude, I've never played there. I'm pretty stoked. I saw Foxbat play there a few months ago with Order of Leviathan and the Stonecutters who ripped it.
Yeah.
So it was a good time, and I've wanted to play there ever since, so we're stoked.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and also, too... You have a listening party. You had a listening party. Boy, that got pretty wild.
Dude,
out of control, didn't it?
It was weird. Everybody was like naked and covered in Jello, and dude, it was crazy.
I couldn't believe that you guys managed to get a live elephant.
Dude, I know. It's Zach's marketing genius again.
Again, knocked it right out of the park. So, guys, if you weren't there, you should have been there. That's all I can say. You really missed out. So, yeah, you got an album release show. You said that's going to be on July...
8th, yeah. Haymarket Whiskey Bar with Summer Youth and Street Sense.
Guys, and if you're listening, if you were ever a fan of my old band, Uh-Huh Baby Yeah, Kevin is the singer of Summer Youth, and it's like their first show.
Yeah, as in Bones.
Bones is in it, yeah. Also, some Uh-Huh Baby Yeah alumni and members of Iron Falcon, if you like Iron Falcon. So I will say, hey, guys, if you wanted to check out something new... And you have nothing to do on a Friday night. This is where you're going to want to be on July 8th. That's all I'm saying.
Saturday night, but it's cool.
Whatever.
Dude, Saturday. I don't want people to be like, they said it was Friday. Like, you know how people are.
July 8th. It turned out it was a Saturday, man. Yeah. They probably thought that I was podcasting from last year. Like, this is, guys, this is from the past. I'm stacking this a year in advance. But yeah, Well, I'm definitely going to say be there Saturday, July 8th.
Don't miss it. It'll be a fun time.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome time. And you know what I've just noticed here? I noticed that you're wearing a podcast t-shirt.
I am.
Return of the Living Podcast, is it?
Yeah, that's it. You can't wear your own band shirt, but it's cool if you're in a podcast.
I was going to say, there's a striking resemblance to someone that looks like you on this
thing. Dude, there's... So, the one that... Which one do you think it is?
I'm going to say...
The listeners can't see this.
The listeners can't see it, but I know you are definitely the one with the hat on.
Yep. Okay, good. Well, so, I didn't think it looked like me. I fought against this logo because I was like, that looks like my Uncle Dallas. Like, I don't want this shirt. But this is what we stuck with, so it's fun.
I would have actually, honestly, I would have picked the one next to that, but I work with a girl, and that's her brother. So she pointed that out. She wore that shirt to work the other day, and she's like, "That's my brother," and I was like, "Fair enough."
So are you like serious? Is it Amanda?
It's Katie Bamforth.
Katie, yep. Dang it!
Shout out to Katie Bamforth. You're a supporter of both our podcasts, Return to the Living Podcast and Shaun vs. Wild. Hey. Thanks for tuning in. That's what happens. You get a good shout out.
She can like flip me off through the internet for forgetting her name. That's cool. Or what is it confusing like, her with his Brad's wife.
That's what is it like, Amanda or something?
Amanda. I can't remember.
So what is, tell me about Return of the Living Podcast.
So we all work at like haunted houses, which people always look at me weird. Like, why would you have a podcast for that? But we were all heavily involved in the haunted house industry. So we started a podcast about it, essentially is how it started, and it just kind of developed into us talking about movies, comics, whatever else we like, as well as the haunted house industry. So it's kind of a jack of all trades, but it's mostly focused in the haunted house stuff.
Well, let me ask, one, how did you get involved in doing haunted houses?
I was going through a bad breakup like around 2007, and I was just like bumming around at work, and my buddy Corey was just like, "Hey, come work at this haunted house with me tonight." And I was like, "No, that sounds really lame. Why would I do that?" And he was like, "Dude, it's fun. You'll get paid to scare the shit out of people." And I was like, "All right, I'll check it out." And then I just went and fell in love with it. I had a strong like theater background anyway, so getting to do something in the theater realm and also just scare people for fun and money has been pretty fun.
You just scare people for money. What's the money like? Is it good? You don't have to give me a dollar figure,
dude,
or anything.
No, not at all. It's definitely a passion job, but you make a little extra seasonal money and it's good.
Yeah. I mean, you could scare people for free, but scaring them for like a little bit of money is always better.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm not going to complain. So it's been fun. So I worked my way up to being the director of the first haunted house I worked at, and then we were kind of well known for our actors, and that's kind of what enabled us to start a podcast about it. That's like why I'm an authoritative in quotes like figure in that realm, and
that's why I rule with such an iron fist on my podcast.
Yeah, nobody knows who the dick I am, but that's what we do a show when I'm somewhat experienced. So
where do you,
it's informative.
What, where are your haunted, which haunts are you directing?
So I'm not, really a director anymore, but right now I'm holding up at Haunted Hotel, here in Louisville, and I'm, an actor coordinator, like, or in slash manage stage manager. So I just kind of like help hire people and train all the actors and do that whole thing. So,
well, let me ask you this. What's the weirdest thing about working at a haunted house? I imagine you probably have to like wash like fake blood off of you like every day and then go to your regular job. They're like, "Is that blood?" And you're like, "Yeah." "Is that yours?" "Some of it."
"Some of it."
You had to get to have that Fight Club moment.
Yeah. No, we have a lot of those moments too. I think probably the weirdest part though is just, I mean, like just actually doing it, you have to get in this weird headspace where you're like a bad guy, but not a bad guy. And just fuck with people on a level that like you wouldn't normally get away with. Like you can, you just get to really mess with people. That's right. The best way I can describe it. Like in a way that would normally, like if you just did it to somebody in Walmart, it'd get you shot or whatever.
You'd just go to prison forever.
Yeah.
In this day and age.
I think probably the weirdest story I have is me and this guy were working in this room, and, his character was just like drenched in like fake blood, and he was like eating like a fake corpse or whatever. This all sounds terrible.
Yeah, as you normally would.
Yeah, as you would. And he like reached out to offer this girl that was walking through some, like this drunk girl, some blood. And she just looked at us weird. And then she reached under her skirt and like offered us.
Oh, that's her, literally the most disgusting thing I've ever heard.
We were both like in character, just like, oh, let go. Get out.
Get out. You're fired. You're actually, you know what? You don't get to go through the rest of the... To the rest of the tour.
I mean, we're kicking you out. Also, do you want a job? Like, I don't
know. You know what? I like your gusto. You have chutzpah. We need to put you in this gig. And also, too, let me ask you this. So your podcast, not just about haunted houses, but you said also horror movies, comics, what have you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite horror movie?
Oh, man. Probably Trick or Treat. Trick or Treat is how it's spelled.
Have you ever seen Trick or Treat, the 80s movie with Gene Simmons
yes.
and Ozzy Osbourne?
Yeah.
I always like that they're on the cover and they're like only in it for like, I don't know, 10 seconds each.
Yeah.
But that was always, I always loved that movie growing up. As you can see, also, Kiss poster here. I grew up a big Kiss fan. So that's how I heard about the movie. And I remember watching it and I was just like, man, this is... not what I thought it was going to be. But I did think that the idea, that's something that, if I remember it correctly, it's just like a kid's favorite rock star dies and he resurrects him, you know, through some sort of ritual. And as far as, I think that's what it was. And I was like, you know what? They need to redo that. That's not a bad concept. Or, guys, if you're like in a metal band, maybe that could be your music video or something.
Dude.
Not a bad concept.
And get on it. Like, who's like metal enough to do that around here? I feel like... somebody's missing an opportunity.
All right, guys, here's the idea. For your music video, your band dies tragically, and some super fan resurrects you to play in his bedroom.
Dude, I feel like they should get like a fairly popular singer that's like not worth much money anymore, like to just like be in their video and do it. Like, I don't know. What's King Diamond doing?
Yeah, what's
like,
King Diamond up to?
I don't
know. Just get Corey Feldman.
Or Corey.
We'll just get Corey Feldman. You know what? I think we can do that. I think Corey Feldman, maybe, I don't know, he's on his second wave, man, once he did those Good Morning Americas.
Dude, I almost feel bad for him.
I feel bad that he's so awesome, and I'm not. I was about it, man. I was 100% realistically about it. I was like, man, this ain't too bad. I mean, it's different, but it ain't too bad.
I haven't listened to the recordings, to be fair. I've only seen them.
I will be.
Are they good? Have you listened to the recordings?
No, I haven't listened to the actual finished product. I didn't need to. I was sold by the performances. You know, call me old fashioned, but I'm a live show kind of guy. You know, he sold me then. So Trick or Treat. I haven't seen that. What's Trick or Treat? Is that like a... that's like a series of short films, right?
Sort of. So it's got that vibe.
An anthology movie?
Yeah, it's got that like anthology vibe, like Tales from the Dark Side or one of those like classic, or like Tales from
Creep
the Crypt.
Show.
Yeah, Creepshow. Any of that stuff. It's got that vibe, but they're all intertwined by this character named Sam, or Sam Hain, the Spirit of Halloween. And so he's kind of like involved in all the intertwining stories.
I hear a lot about that movie. I think maybe Blake Lockman told me a lot about that movie once.
I can see that, yeah.
That's you know what my favorite one is? I've mentioned it on the show before. This is a sleeper hit. I actually wrote an article about this last year. Someone asked me, they're like, hey, we need to know what these musicians' favorite Halloween movie is. Can you guess?
I don't know. I kind of want to say Sleepaway Camp. But
no, it's not okay. Sleepaway Camp. But it's low-key, man. It's a sleeper hit. I wouldn't expect that you would have gotten it. Have you ever seen Frailty?
Dude, like maybe a long time ago. I have a vague memory.
I'll have to let you borrow it. Frailty is the jam. Listeners, if you're out there, watch Frailty. It comes on Netflix from time to time, or like some of the, or Hulu or something. It might be on Netflix right now, for all I know. I have it on VHS tape, and that's the format that I enjoy. But it stars Bill Paxton, RIP, Matt McConaughey, Powers Booth, RIP. He died this year too.
Dude, man.
Yeah, it's just like a...
this is like sick, but my favorite thing is when Powers Booth died, everybody had those "well bye" memes.
Dude, I knew that.
So I was like,
"Well, bye." Smells like somebody died. Just taking it to the next level. I love Tombstone. That's one of my favorite. That's probably, honestly, probably my favorite movie of all time.
Dude, top five for sure.
It's just such a dudely movie. You probably won't find a movie more dudely.
You also won't find another good Val Kilmer movie. Well, you might.
You're just not going to find one that good.
Well, at least that good. I don't know. I still kind of like Batman Forever.
Dude, Val Kilmer kills it in Tombstone, though. You're right. I mean, I like Batman Forever, too. I mean, I think Batman Forever gets a bad rap. I mean, Batman and Robin, nothing to write home about. Batman Forever, it's got some staying power. Willow, there you go. There's a movie that Val Kilmer's in.
Yep.
Real genius, pretty tight. But nothing comes close to how awesome he was in Tombstone. It's just how it is.
Ever will, yeah.
That's just how the world works, I guess. You can't be awesome in every movie. You just got to be super awesome in one. Unless you're Daniel Day-Lewis, I guess.
Dude, I just heard he retired.
Yeah.
Bummed me out.
Nobody retires forever.
I hope so. I hope it's like wrestling. He comes back older and better.
Yeah, he just comes back. And yeah, exactly. He's like going to be like the Ric Flair of acting. And he'll just act until he's, you know, 85 years old and gets kicked out of airport bars for being drunk.
Elbow dropping his coat.
kicking his alligator shoes off, you know, that sort of thing. What other horror movies are you into?
Dude, I dig a lot of the anthology stuff, but I think one of my other favorites is there's a parody called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. That's kind of like a sleeper hit. So it takes place in this world where like Jason and Freddy and all these guys really exist. And it's about this serial killer that these college students are doing like a student film on serial killers. And they meet this guy who is one named Leslie Vernon, is like the mythos he's built up. And so they just kind of follow him around as he stalks this girl and like sets up like an abandoned house trap for these college kids that are going to go get drunk. And like it turns like there's like a scary flip at the end, but the lead up is all just him. And you meet the guy that like mentors him. And they're like doing like breathing exercises so they can pretend to be dead for long periods of time. And he talks about how like, he's like, yeah, you only see me walking, but really I'm just like huffing it. You know how much cardio that takes to like look like I'm not winded and I'm just walking behind you.
Have you seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Dude, that's a classic. Yes.
I don't know if you would call that a horror movie, but I would call that a lesson in just genius filmmaking.
Dude,
genius
storytelling. I have a framed Tucker and Dale poster in my apartment right now.
That's like the most clever setup I've seen for a movie, because they were just able to play on those tropes so accurately and then just make it spin it to where like they're completely innocent they're having like the worst night of their life.
Yeah.
So I watched a horror movie the other day, and as I'm talking, guys, I am on my phone because I cannot remember the name, but it had the sickest title. And let me give you the premise. Basically, it's like late 80s. And it's kind of like it starts out kind of like a Porky's type vibe, where these like college dorks like want to see naked chicks. And so they go to the sorority house where they're going to be like naked chicks being like initiated into the sorority and getting whipped and stuff like that. And anyway, somehow they get caught spying, and the head lady at the sorority is like, all right, guys, well, if you want to be initiated to these two naked girls that are getting whipped, they're like, you have to take these three dudes and you need to go to a bowling alley. And you're going to need to steal something and bring it back. All right, so this is the setup. They go to a bowling alley. Turns out there's a bowling trophy that they steal. And inside the bowling trophy is a demon. And the demon offers to grant them wishes. And as you can imagine, it goes horribly awry.
Okay, I'm sold.
And here's what it's called. Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama.
Okay.
You're going to want to check this out.
I'm down.
Listeners at home, check it out too. Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama. Some of the acting was really top-notch.
I could only assume.
I will say this. Great. For the movie, I mean, you know, who am I? I'm just the guy that enjoys films. But I will say that the movie itself looked like it had a little bit of a budget. Acting wasn't there. I mean, it was whatever. But the movie itself actually looked pretty good.
Well, I mean, I feel like cameras and stuff are fairly cheap these days. Like,
well, this was made in the 80s. This was actually, place in the late 80s. And it looks like, almost it looks like a 90s film that was like trying to look like the 80s. And it actually was made in the 80s. So I don't know what that means, but it was good quality. And it really looked like 1988.
Matter of fact, I think it was made in 1988 or 9. So there you go.
Nice. I'm going to have to hunt this one down on VHS.
Yeah, definitely. If you can. Or you can just check it out on... I think they put movies on the internet. So
you can find them sped up on YouTube, like slightly sped up, so everybody sort of sounds like a chipmunk.
Perfect.
That's one of our favorite pastimes now. We watch Predator on YouTube.
I'm going to watch Predator, but you know what? I only have 45 minutes, so I need to watch it at twice the speed. Yeah. Have you seen Predator 2X? What is that, the sequel? No, it's just Predator twice the speed.
Twice the speed, yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Speaking of Tucker and Dale and Tyler Labine, who's in that movie, have you watched Reaper? Have you ever seen that show? It was like 2 seasons before it got canceled.
I remember it, but I never got a chance to actually sit down and
it's
watch
it. It's just the premise is this kid's parents like sell his soul to the devil on his 21st birthday just so they can have him, which is like a weird concept, but... So it starts out on this kid's 21st birthday, and he's just like, why is mom crying? And, like, the devil comes and recruits him as his bounty hunter. But he only... So he has to hunt down escaped souls from, like, hell. But the devil only gives him weapons that he think he can handle. So, like, his first weapon is, like, a dirt devil, like, a handheld, like, dust vacuum. And he's like, gotta capture this demon with it. It's pretty...
Dust buster.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's Kevin Smith was a consultant. I don't know what that means, but it's got that, like, same style of humor.
I remember that. I remember that show briefly, and I remember that's what I remember most about it. It was like Kevin Smith, like, was a consultant, or like Kevin Smith Presents, or some of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Like maybe a producer or something on the show. Are you into, well, you said also too, like, you guys do a lot of comics. What do you think about Kevin Smith in the comics world?
Dude, actually, so my favorite superhero is Green Arrow. I'm going to be real hipster about it.
Right.
Before the TV show existed.
Right, yeah.
And his run on Green Arrow is kind of like what re-got me back into comics, like when I got like older.
Right.
So I all his comic stuff's like great. His run on Daredevil, Green Arrow, all his Batman stuff is super good.
The Widening Gyre.
Yeah. It is.
It's the Batman I can think of off the top of my head. Yeah, I liked his Green Arrow too. I used to be really into Green Arrow also, in the like the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. I always thought he was just like, the thing about comic books is you can like literally base if you like somebody strictly off of the way that they look, like if they look cool or not. And he looked really cool at the time because he just had like a huge like blonde beard, I think, right?
And yeah, then,
like,
so he rocks the Van Dyke.
Yeah, that's it. Like, yes, yeah. The Robin Hood gaucho mustache and goatee combo. Yeah, and I just remember thinking like, man, he looks really cool. And and then I saw actually at the library one time the run that Kevin Smith did. They had like a hardback version of it. And I was like, oh, that's badass. But I've never watched the Arrow show, but people have been losing their minds about it.
Oh yeah, I actually I was at Wizard World in Louisville. This is just like a dumb story. We're talking about Arrow, it made me think of it, but like I went into the bathroom, I guess right before security like blocked it off so Stephen Amell could go pee. And so like I'm like zipping it up and turning it around, and I see him walk in, and you can just look on his face is like like, oh god. And I was like, don't worry man, I don't want to talk to you. And he just like chuckled like walked off. But I was like, that poor guy. Like, yeah. He can't even take a leak.
Well, yeah, without being accosted.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this story several times. Podcast listeners of the show, this is probably not news to you, but I'm going to talk to my friend Jared about it anyway. One time I went to Wizarding World in Indianapolis, and I went to pee, and who pees at the stall directly next to me but Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, I remember you talking about that, yeah.
The Incredible Hulk. So if you ever want to feel inadequate, that's a great way to do it, guys.
Dude, that's it made me think of another weird encounter. I was at like Whorehound in Indianapolis, and we were just walking, and all these guys started to push past us, and I felt somebody grab the back of my neck, and I was just like, who the fuck? And I turned around, and it's like Robert Englund, and he like winked at me, and I was like, what the fuck?
Dude, he probably so just random. He's probably like the, if I were Robert Englund, I would just be like Bill Murray and just randomly accost strangers all the time.
I'm pretty sure that's what he does. Yeah, from my experience, that's...
Like, you ever hear that story? Like, Bill Murray will just like come up to you at Wendy's, like eat your fries, and be like, "Dude, your friends will never believe this. Your friends will never believe you."
God, I hope that's true though, because I don't believe anybody that would have told me that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. You know who I'm really into comics wise? I guess not really a character.
But a run that I'm really into is The Invisibles. Did you ever read The Invisibles?
Dude, not much. I need to.
You know what?
Maybe it's on my list.
I'll just I'll let you borrow the collections. It's one of a few that I actually bought. Grant Morrison. Are you a Grant Morrison fan?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's Grant Morrison at his most Grant Morrison. It's super weird.
Is it just super weird and fucked up?
Yeah, and like every conspiracy that you've ever heard of from time untold is basically wrapped up in that. And I'm a big weirdo like that. Like, so it's just like kind of right up my alley.
Have you like read any like Alan Moore or?
Yeah, I do like Alan Moore also.
His Swamp Thing stuff is gnarly too.
That's what I've always heard. I haven't got a chance to pick that up. Man, comics is kind of an expensive
dude. It's hobby. Dumb expensive. I finally sold all my comic books. Like I turned like 28, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I've got boxes of this shit.
Right.
I made a ton of money though. I was like stoked, but at the same time sad. Like,
you know. I've resorted to this because I invested a few $100 in like graphic novels and stuff, and not because I think they're going to be worth anything, because I mean all these graphic novels, they make them by the thousands, and trade paperbacks or whatever, they make them by the thousands, but
it's the best way to go, cheapest,
exactly. But I probably spent just a couple hundred on things that I really like. I tell you, probably my favorite besides The Invisibles, Animal Man is really high on my list. And that new 52 version of Animal Man, very tight. If you haven't checked out that run, you should, because it was great. Anyway, so I invested a couple hundred dollars in that, but now I'm just like, I'm just going to get Comixology from Amazon. Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go digital. It's going to be way cheaper.
That's how I do everything. If I really love something, I'll buy a print copy, but mostly right. I'm just digital. I'm like that with music, too, though.
I was going to say, that sounds like how our whole generation became with music. It's like, hey, I'm going to listen to it for free, but if I like it, I'm going to buy them shits.
Yeah, I mean, like, what was it we were saying the other day was, we were, like, doing our merch setup, and, like, Zach was like, whatever, I mean, this is risky because somebody could steal a CD, but... honestly, I'd be honored if somebody wanted to steal our music.
Well, they're going to steal it on the internet anyway, so they might as well just steal the physical copy. What have you.
I don't know. Do you remember LimeWire? Did you ever do that?
Oh, bro. Like, I was like the mayor of LimeWire. If LimeWire was on Foursquare, I'd be the mayor. I loved LimeWire. This was how I got on LimeWire. What I would do is I would take a band that I really liked, and I remember specifically doing this with... just whatever I was obsessed with. AFI was one of the bands. Coheed was one of the bands. Him was one of those bands. But what I would do, Smashing Pumpkins, I would just get on Google and look up their song list. And these people had collected every song that they ever recorded where they just wrote a list. And then I would just get on LimeWire and literally, like... the first five songs on that list, I would download. And then when those are done, I'd do the second five. I literally had every AFI song ever released from Davey Havoc, if you're listening. I'm sorry. I did buy the albums too, guys, eventually. But yeah, I had like every AFI song released until before December Underground. And then right after that, like I could not give a shit less about AFI. Like I could not care at all. I feel like it's where everybody
dropped off.
And I didn't even, like, Sing the Sorrow, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I bought the CD. I was like, all right, cool. And I downloaded a couple of the B-sides. And then once December Underground hit, I'm like, I couldn't care any less.
Dude, I have, like, a huge beef with them because they're on my, like, one of my bucket list bands. Like, I'd never seen them live. So I went to see them live, like, a year or two ago at Mercury Ballroom.
Yeah.
And they played for, there was them in an opener, $30 to get in. They played for 30 minutes and then bounced. And I was just like, I'm mad, but at the same time, they're a punk band and all their songs are 2 minutes long. What did I expect? And like,
I can't believe they would play for 30 minutes.
30 minutes, though, yeah.
That's crazy. And what year was this? Like 2 years ago?
Just like 2 years ago, yeah.
That's fucking, what song, what albums were they playing? Were they playing the hits or what? Or are they just playing the old stuff?
They played some really old stuff and that surprised me, but I think it was right after, Burials? That album? Yeah, it was right after, right around that time they were touring on that.
Dang. You know, I've seen AFI like 7 or 8 times. They're like one of the bands that I've seen probably the most. AFI and Kiss. I've seen them a ton, both of them. But the last time I saw AFI was Warped Tour 2004 or 5, whenever Sing the Sorrow came out. And then I never, once I saw them, and I was just like, you know what? I think I've cashed out on this one. I think I'm done. And that was it. Saw them like 7 or 8 times real early. And that was it. That's it for me and AFI.
It's a good time to hop out.
Yeah.
Did you ever download an album like in the wrong order? And then you like burned it that way. And then later in life, when you got older and had money and you bought the album, you're like, what the shit is this?
This
like,
is not the way I remember it. This is
not. And you just prefer your crappy version better.
Emmanuel's soundtrack to a head rush was exactly that. I had it in the order that everybody burnt it in. And then when the album came out and they switched the tracks around, and I was like, oh, this isn't what I remember.
Yeah.
I just listened to my old burnt version that had the Hey Man intro on it.
Dude, I missed that intro. I was like really bummed they didn't keep that on the record.
Oh well, I want to get Emmanuel. I want to get Matt Breen, if you're listening, just come on the show. Let's talk about Emmanuel. It's an integral part of everyone in the Louisville music scene right now.
For sure.
So we need to discuss that. And you know what? As we're wrapping it up here, we've talked a lot. Where can people find? Let's get back to the business. Let's get back to the meat.
Wait, before we wrap it up, I want to ask you a question now.
Okay.
What's your favorite version of Kiss?
Oh.
Okay. Like, are you like a... Because mine's hair metal Kiss.
Honestly, I will agree with you. I would say 80s Kiss. I love 80s Kiss. I love... Paul Stanley just really shines in that. I would say my favorite era, okay, is probably... Okay, I'll tell you my three favorite albums, and they're all kind of significant of the eras. I love Hotter Than Hell, so really early 1974 Kiss, like their first year. Creatures of the Night, as you see, I got the Creatures of the Night poster, 1980-81 era, when they were becoming a heavy band. And then they just released a lot of shit-ass 80s like transition records, you know? Well, not a lot of them, but Animalize, like for me, I'm just like, forget that. But then I love something about like Asylum and Hot in the Shade and Revenge. Revenge would be my third favorite era or album, I guess. So, but yeah, I love 80s Kiss. I would say that they're a stronger band in the 80s than they were in the damn sure in the 90s and the 2000s.
For sure.
And the 2010s.
Arguably the 70s.
Arguably, I would say it's just as good. It's good in different ways. You know, the 70s has just like a great 70s vibe to it, a 70s classic rock. But in the 80s, man, I love the hair metal. I love that whole sound, and they just kill it. Paul Stanley just kills it. Paul Stanley's voice just goes from being, hey, I'm Paul Stanley from Kiss, to I am a serious contender.
For sure. I just thought of this. I know we're wrapping it up.
Oh, but no, we're not wrapping it up. We're just going to continue on. Now that we're talking about Kiss and someone likes it on this podcast, we will continue to talk forever.
So, 1 year at the haunted house, a bunch of us dressed up like Kiss for Halloween, like beforehand, and one of my buddies kept his makeup on, and he's like, it's my favorite scare in like all the years I've done haunted houses. He just jumped out of a corner dressed up like Paul Stanley and scared this lady by going, I can't hear. It's like the best thing I've ever seen.
That's possibly the greatest story ever. There is actually a CD, and I'll burn it for you, of just all of Paul Stanley's stage rants. That's all it is. And it's just him like, how you doing, people? You know? Every time we do this one, place lights up just like a damn Christmas tree. That's another one of my favorite Paul Stanley lines.
Fuck, man.
It's like, this song, you know it by the beginning. It's got a beginning that goes, oh yeah, I know that one. Man, what a great guy's got a gift for gab. He should have his own podcast. I would subscribe. But yeah, and then on that note, everybody's probably tuned out at that point. But yeah, where can people find Light Treasons on the internet? And one more time, hit everybody with the deets for the show, for the Amelie show.
Yeah, so you can find us online, lighttreasons.com. That's got all the links to our social media stuff on there as well. Just keep it simple. Because I don't fucking know what our Twitter handle is. I don't know who uses Twitter.
Don't worry, guys. I'll post it in the show notes. Yeah, that's one thing I am good for.
You can find us there. And then the release show is July 8th, Haymarket Whiskey Bar. I think it's like $8 to get in with Summer Youth and Street Sense. Come hang out. We'll be out by 11, I promise. We'll get you home in time.
You can take an elephant ride. That elephant is probably still hanging around from the listening party.
Zach, if you're listening, get the fucking elephant again.
Get the elephant back. Guys, that's going to be $8 well spent for the elephant alone. I'm just saying. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in to the Sean vs. Wild podcast. If you like what you hear from me, you can check me out, as you probably already know, on iTunes and Stitcher and Podcast Addict and wherever else that you like to get your podcast, any podcatcher, if you will. It's on iHeartRadio and Google Play, and you can even check it out on YouTube. Are you a big watcher of podcasts on YouTube?
Sometimes, like if I'm at work, that's where I go because it's just easier.
I'm just getting feedback because I don't know, I'm not into it. But of course, I don't have an elaborate video setup. I'm not like Joe Rogan yet. So we'll see how it goes. It'll probably just be an awesome picture of you.
I'm cool with that.
I mean, I definitely just click on that. Who wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
All right. Well, Jared, hey, man, thanks so much for coming. And let's turn on the air conditioner and crack open a few beers.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, no problem. Hey, guys, thanks so much for tuning in to the Sean vs. Wild podcast.